The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The purpose of today's forum is to discuss the global pandemic response, the current state of knowledge regarding early and hospital treatment, vaccine efficacy and safety, what we did right, what went wrong, what should be done now, and what needs to be addressed long term. There's still much to learn about the coronavirus, COVID the disease, and COVID vaccines. Early in the pandemic, our knowledge was minimal. But even then, because of what we learned from Italy and the Princess cruise ship, it was becoming obvious COVID was a disease that targeted the old and those with certain comorbidities. Instead of using that information, public health officials pursued a one-size-fits-all response that relied heavily on creating a state of fear to ensure compliance.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That, of course, Senator Ron Johnson from the great state of Wisconsin there. It's been a while since I've talked COVID with you. I know it feels like we do it every week. I had been away from the microphone last week. I want to bring you up to speed on a number of things that are happening. I saw a news report right before I came into the studio. I was in a bunch of meetings throughout the day, that Pfizer, you know, they've developed a vaccine now for kids under five. All right, it could be available by the end of February. Are you going to vaccinate your child? You're going to vaccinate your five-year-old, your infant? How about your grandkid? What do you think is going to happen? That to me is just a absolute wild story. And you know, when COVID first came out, and again, I'm not a physician. I'll be speaking to an infectious disease doc in a second, and you're more than welcome to join me. But you know, that was targeted towards that initial round of COVID. Look at how many different variants we've had, you know, Beta and Delta and Omicron and who knows what else. And I've seen so many vaccinated people, you know, get COVID, you know, get the Omicron variant or some form of it. So is it worth vaccinating your children? I often said if I could go back in time, I would do a couple things. One, I'd buy Apple stock, right? I'd buy it early. You could retire, you know, on a couple hundred bucks, really. The other thing I do is go back and buy Pfizer stock or Moderna stock. I mean, look at how many vaccines these guys are manufacturing, and they're trying to target every variant. They're trying now to target kids, infants. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has given full approval to Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine, and that's good for the company. But it comes as the case and death numbers are starting to decline. And it also comes as Pfizer, you know, they're reportedly, they want the FDA to use emergency use authorization, you know, for approval of this vaccination for kids that are 6 months old. That's all, 6 months, 6 months to 5 years of age. The problem is that the data so far shows that two doses aren't working, right? I mean, I don't know how many, you might be boosted and you know, two doses and your booster and still got sick. I don't know. Two doses apparently aren't working and the kids are probably going to need a third, but the FDA may go ahead with the approval before the third shot of, and before that data is collected. Jim Garrity, I was reading a piece by him at National Review, and he pointed out this morning that, you know, things are, well, they're actually looking up, right? The average daily number of new COVID cases, they're on the decline. And again, these cases are reported nationwide. They've declined 42% in the last 2 weeks. And again, I'm not an infectious disease doctor, but I predicted this. I said before Christmas, we are going to see a major spike in January. You know, there's no doubt in my mind, and I can't tell you how many people were sick Christmas and after Christmas and right before it. All those airports were jammed. People were gathering with family. They were Christmas shopping, right? We saw this major, major spike. And I also said come February, we're going to see a decrease. It's not science, it's logic, right? The daily rate of deaths, that has increased, though. It's up 30%. And of course, it's to be expected since death is a lagging indicator. It trails, you know, these infections. And then, of course, the Delta variant is now just about gone. As of January 22nd, 99.9% of all COVID-19 cases were the variant that was identified as Omicron. So Delta is now down, I think, to about, I think I read 0.1%. So I'm sure it's still out there. But will we see other variants? That's a big question, too, right? Omicron, what's going to happen with it? With Omicron being less deadly than Delta, you're going to start seeing, of course, the death numbers come down in a couple weeks too. That's my other prediction. And again, it's not brain science. It's just logic. You just look at the pattern. But the big majority of people are saying right now that it's time to move on, right? I don't know how you feel about this. Are you tired of putting masks on? Are you tired of, gosh, are you just tired of COVID? I am. I got to be honest with you. I just want life to resume. There was a Monmouth poll that I saw this morning, and it showed that 70% of Americans say that, look, we just have to live with it. We need to accept COVID is here, and let's just start living our life. Let's just move on, right? COVID is no longer a pandemic. It's now endemic, they say, and we just need to learn to live with it. You need to live with COVID. You're going to get it, you know, and you'll survive it. I know people who've had it and they survived. I also know I have people who are very close to me who passed away from it. Father Ubald, Father Seraphim Mikulenko. I mean, so I don't ever want to underplay it, but I do. I see what Britain is doing, right? And they're done. They're done with the face masks. They're done with the mandates. They're back to business. Now, this is not a message our leaders want to hear. So it's something that many government leaders, they're really contemplating. There are a lot of mask mandates in place. You know, in Illinois, where Relevant Radio's network headquarters is located, there's all kinds of mandates in place. And you've heard about the truckers' protest in Canada. We talked about that. There are now truckers in our own country. They're here in the U.S. who want to start the same kind of convoy and head to Washington. That would be an amazing sight. I almost don't want them to do it because we're already having supply chain issues. Can you imagine if our truckers all decided to go to Washington, D.C.? How much longer will it take you to get the things you need? You know, Maggie was saying to me before the break, you better stock up if that happens, right? That's true. Not just on food and supplies. I had shared that, you know, my wife and I need a new washer and dryer, right? And as a result of it, I've been searching for one. You can't buy it. They're 6 to 8 weeks out. 6 to 8 weeks out. You know, supply chain, yeah, I would probably argue that. But can you imagine if trucks go on strike, how that will delay things? The mandates were challenged, of course, last week in a hearing at the Wisconsin Republican. Maggie played the audio for you. You know, there was a hearing that Senator Ron Johnson, as I said, a Republican from Wisconsin, he held a panel of doctors and other experts, right? And this was a five-hour piece. It was called COVID Second Opinion. And my one producer, Tom, he says, it was so compelling, I couldn't stop listening to it. I said, you listened to all 5 hours? He said, all 5 hours. Maggie, open your mic. Because Tom told you about it as well. And what was your reaction? Did you find it equally as compelling?
Yeah. He had said that on Friday. And so on Sunday, I had planned on just kind of, putzing around the house and just doing some chores. And so I was like, I'm going to put on that hearing and just keep this on in the background and do stuff. There were so many times when I had to stop what I was doing and come back and sit down and pay attention. In particular, I pulled a couple pieces of audio from it, if you want to run any of it. But there
I'd
was
love
a,
to hear it. Sure.
There was a nurse towards the end of the whole hearing. She was the last person that came up. She had the most harrowing stories. So I pulled two pieces of audio. I don't know if you want to listen to it.
I know Dr. Tapali's standing by. Let's play one right now.
Okay.
He can hear too, and maybe we can talk a little bit. Look, you're familiar with it. I haven't had a chance to listen to those 5 hours, but I'd love to see what you dug up.
You got it. Here we go.
Thank you, Senator, for giving me an uninterrupted opportunity to represent the harm that is coming to the patients in the American hospitals and the lack of early intervention. My name is Nicole Sirotek. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for over a decade. My specialty is critical care, trauma, and flight. Since the start of the COVID pandemic, I've actually been rebranded, I guess you can say, as a leading expert in early intervention strategies executed on a large mass scale using the FLCCC protocol, as well as COVID patient ventilator protective strategies to optimize COVID patients on the ventilators. My story actually begins back in May of 2020. I was one of the original nurses that went to NYC to help with the COVID pandemic, because as we remembered, they needed nurses, and most importantly, they needed ventilators. Well, I was the whole package, a flight nurse that can manage ventilators. And when I arrived there, the gross negligence and the medical malfeasance that happened in there and the complete medical mismanagement of these patients is what has led us to the situation that we're in right now. The pandemic and the hysteria that was created from poor public health measures and poor execution of appropriate early intervention strategies and the handicapping of medical professionals doing their job has led to where we are right now and into the crisis situation that we are in. But when I was in New York, and what continues to happen today is that many of them are not dying from COVID. What we saw on these front lines, we knew what was happening. When we asked for the ibuprofen, they said, no, it was contraindicated. When we asked, like, why aren't we giving them steroids? Oh, well, it's not. We're just following orders. Following orders has led to the sheer number of deaths that has occurred in these hospitals. I didn't see a single patient die of COVID. I've seen a substantial number of patients die of negligence and medical malfeasance. The pharmaceutical companies had gone into those hospitals and decided to practice, I guess you can say, on the minorities, on the disadvantaged, on the marginalized populations that we know that we had no advocates for, because the very agencies that should have been protecting them were closed because we were sheltering in place.
There's so much there. Maggie, I want to even listen more. I'm thinking about that as a lot of what she said there. It's like, wow. It's pretty amazing. I wonder what the real death toll numbers are. About 6 months ago, I saw, I think it was Cheryl Atkinson. She did a piece and went to this small town, and some of the deaths were attributed to COVID, and one was a suicide, or it was a murder-suicide with a gun. You know, it's bizarre how some of these numbers are, but let me welcome into the program. We'll get his take on that, and we'll play a little bit more of this audio as well. I'd like to get Dr. Robert DiBolli, who's been our COVID expert. He's an adult and pediatric infectious disease doc in the northwestern suburbs of Chicago, and it's always good to talk with him. Doctor, thank you again for your patience and for your time.
Great to be with you, Drew. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is a lot of those doctors that sat around the table there have kind of lost their careers because of, you know, their stand on things. Yeah. And been forced to leave their academic positions, not be allowed to say that they were affiliated here or there, you know, have complete dissociation. And they aren't, some of them have lost their licenses and so on, ability to practice. It's they didn't talk about that, but that has been at play as well. It's very unfortunate, and you know, I listened to a few hours of it. I mean, I was doing my desk work, you know, I had it on in the background, and you know, three doctors, their voice started trembling, they almost started crying, and they were talking about, you know, patients they were caring for, and I understand that emotion right now. You know, after the Omicron went through our area, and despite my best efforts with many, many patients, quite a few of them passed away. Yeah. And, you know, we thought, a couple of them, you know, we thought we had a victory, 55-year-old guy, overweight, unvaccinated, untreated diabetes, hypertension, so on, many risk factors. And he ended up on the ventilator. You know, we gave him everything we could in the hospital, remdesivir and tocilizumab, and he ended up on the ventilator, got a little infection on the ventilator, did a lot better, got off the ventilator, you know, got transferred out of the ICU, and like we're all so happy. And then a day and a half later, he threw up, aspirated, and died. And it was wow. he coded and died, and it was just so it's just been such a very difficult emotional thing, both for the medical providers. Because a lot of medical providers are in the middle, you know, there's only certain things that you can do, and you're not allowed to do other things, and family members want other things done. You know, I personally experienced threats to harm me unless I provided certain medications recently, you know, medications that the hospital won't allow. Wow. It's very, very difficult. It's such a difficult situation. I understand the stress that everybody's under. Because, you know, you got a family member with this, and if you feel like the right things aren't being done, oftentimes when I'm taking care of patients with this, I wonder myself, you know, by giving them these certain medicines, am I helping or am I hurting them? And we just don't know. It's a terrible virus, and if you get it and it's no problem, then you think it's no problem. But there are so many of us that get very sick, and I thought I was going to die back in March of 2020 from it.
Yeah, I remember.
But it didn't happen. Thanks be to Saint Rocco and Father Sam Mazzucchelli for interceding on my behalf. But but that entire thing with Senator Ron Johnson, I would refer everybody to see it. And you get to see what Dr. Alan Cariotti looks like. He's on there, so you get to put a face to a name. So
yeah, we reached out to Dr. Cariotti. He was going to come on right before you to discuss the issue, but we'll get him a little bit later. He lost his job because of COVID. He had some real concerns about. He's not anti-vax, as you know. He's not anti-vaccine at all. But after several of his colleagues had gotten, the shot, several of them came down with cancer. Yeah, I don't want to. I just want to be very objective and very honest here, Doctor. I mean, what kind of empirical evidence do we have? What kind of studies are being done? What do we know now that, you know, this human study group has taken the shot, a majority of Americans have it. Are we seeing a spike at all in cancers? Are we seeing neurological problems? Is there any evidence, or is that all just anecdotal? I mean, it happens with any other type of thing, too. I mean, what do we know? Are we seeing anything, or is there anybody studying that, if that makes sense to you?
I forget the doctor's name, but he runs a multi-state pathology a center, I think in Idaho or Utah, and he was on this. He was in that center as well, and he's actually noted a significant increase in cervical cancer positive Pap smears that are run through his lab, and he noticed an anecdotal uptick in cancers recently. You know, you can't tell that that's due to the vaccine, or you can't tell it's due to the virus, or you can't tell that that's due to lack of care that people have not been getting because of everything being closed down. Also in that video, Senator Johnson's video, was the attorneys that were representing some folks that have been discriminated against. They somehow got a hold of Department of Defense medical diagnosis data. So I think it's called DMED. And they noted they can only look at the raw diagnosis and the incidence of, like, how many people in this group, which is all the military, were diagnosed with condition X in 2001. How many people were diagnosed in 2020, 2021, 2022? The same thing. So they actually found significant increase in I believe heart disease and in cancer. I think it was like 300% increase in cancer diagnoses in the military, which is not exactly a cross-section of the general population. They also found an increase in miscarriages and things of that sort. And as we all know, most of the military has been vaccinated. So there was, in the press, some people were kind of construing that was evidence of a vaccine. However, you can't leap to that judgment. It's kind of interesting to think that, but there could be other things at play, and you can't. There's no causality there, but there might be an inference, but not a causality. So, the vaccine that I've been talking about for a long time, Novavax, they submitted their data at the end of the year. Last year, and yesterday they submitted an application for emergency use authorization. So if you wanted to buy some Novavax stock, it's not clear whether or not they're actually be eligible for an emergency use authorization, because Moderna, which is like the NIH owns half the patent rights on the Moderna vaccine. They got full approval yesterday, right? But it's full approval of the vaccine that's being distributed. Pfizer got full approval for the BioNTech vaccine. But to my knowledge, I don't know of anybody that's gotten the Comirnaty or the BioNTech labeled product, which has a full approval. Everybody that I know is still getting the Pfizer branded vaccine. So whether that's a supply chain issue or by design, they have a legal loophole there. But you can only get emergency use authorization when there's no other product to treat the condition in that disease space. So right now, you've got two approved vaccines. You know, can you get this Novavax approved on emergency
because
use authorization?
If you can, it's going to be, what, years before Novavax will be available, right?
It'll never be available because they actually have been approved everywhere else. The World Health Organization, the European Union, a lot of countries in Southeast Asia, Japan, they're all buying it and giving it to India. Actually, they probably will survive, but it would be probably another 7 to 9 years before Novavax could hit the market in the United States if they don't get the emergency use. Yeah. And it's a very, very effective vaccine, very, very low side effects. It's a traditional type of a vaccine product that I think a lot of people who are really resistant to the mRNA vaccines would embrace. But
I have a friend who's been waiting for it because, you know, I know the church and the USCCB, the Vatican has come out and said, okay, you know, it's ethical and it's moral. You can go ahead and take Pfizer and Moderna. So if you've taken those, you're in good stance. But there are people who still say, well, I don't want any connection at all to aborted fetal lines. And Novavax is clear of that, right? That would be completely 100% ethical, that vaccine. Am I correct in my understanding of that?
Not exactly.
Okay.
Early in the process, for a short period of time, they did test it against, you know, the same lines that the Pfizer vaccine did. Not as extensively, if I can say that, not as long-term. But it still has the same touch of that.
Just for my own clarity, then it falls in the same camp as Pfizer and Moderna, because Pfizer and Moderna, the vaccines weren't cultured in it, but they were tested in it. So Novavax would fall into the same category?
It's not like there's regular routine testing.
Okay.
I mean, it was part of the process early on to see if there was any genetic disruption in the human cell lines, which are those aborted fetal cell lines. But yes, they're virtually identical.
Gotcha.
You know, it's like two glasses of water. The Novavax is a very, very short glass of water, and the Pfizer, Moderna are tall glasses of water, but they still, you know, have the same connection.
Is that a one-shot or two-shot vaccine, Novavax?
Right now, it's a two-shot vaccine, 3 weeks apart.
All right, good.
And there was actually a study that showed that they included it in a mix and match study, so that if you got Pfizer, Moderna, you know, because right now, if you had Pfizer series, you could get a Moderna booster. If you had Moderna, you could get a Pfizer booster.
Right.
The same thing with J&J. There's telling people not to get vaccinated with J&J if anything else is available because of the clotting issues. But Novavax actually is applicable in that too, meaning that if you got Pfizer vaccine series, you could get a Novavax booster, and it was not quite as effective, but nearly as effective as the Pfizer was, which was the best one in any of the mix and matches.
That's good to know. Doctor, hold the thought. When we come back, we'll jump into the phones. If you want to get in on the conversation, you've got a question, a comment, something you want to share, best time to do it is right now. The number for you, 888-914-9149. We're bringing you up to speed on the latest with COVID. We'll get Dr. Tabali's take on vaccinating children as young as 6 months. Something Pfizer wants to do. They're asking for emergency youth authorization to vaccinate kids 5 and under. Fill you in on that and a whole lot more. Stay with me.
The Patrick Madrid Show.
It deepens my faith. It gives me understanding. And I also appreciate the current events.
Good morning, Therese.
Don't ever stop talking about current events. I feel like between your show and Drew's show, I am so much better informed to make decisions about things and to pray on things.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm reminded of what Jesus said in Matthew 26, in verse 41. He says, to watch and pray so that you will not enter into temptation. Now, obviously, they didn't have television or radio or newspapers in those days. But he still taught the people to watch the signs of the times, to be aware of what's going on. And he used examples. I don't think Jesus wants us to just ignore what's happening in the world and just talk about churchy things, because then we will be caught unaware, and he tells us to watch and pray.
At the intersection of faith and culture, The Patrick Madrid Show, 8 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Professor Jay Bhattacharya. I'm a professor of medicine at Stanford University, and I'm pleased to be able to offer an alternative to the lockdown-focused policies that we have followed throughout the pandemic. Those policies have not worked to stop the pandemic and have led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people in the United States and have created destruction and misery almost everywhere they've been tried. As an alternative, I would suggest a plan that I authored with Sunetra Gupta, a professor of epidemiology at Oxford University, and Martin Kulldorff, a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at Harvard University in October of 2020. The basic outlines of that plan would work not just in this pandemic, but in many, many other pandemics. The plan relies on two basic scientific facts, completely undisputed. First, that is that this pandemic, the disease in this pandemic, the virus in this pandemic, is not an equal opportunity virus. In fact, it harms people who are older at much higher rates than people who are younger. A thousandfold difference in the risk of mortality and severe disease from infection in this pandemic. A very large fraction of the population who died from this virus are over the age of 65, and almost 40% of the deaths in the United States that have occurred in nursing home settings where older people with many comorbidities reside. The second scientific fact is that the lockdowns themselves are harmful to population health. The lockdowns have created a crisis in the mental health of the population in the United States and elsewhere. In July of 2020, after only a short amount of lockdown, 1 in 4 young adults in the United States reported seriously considering suicide. It's also affected physical health. For instance, many people skipped cancer screening. Many people skipped even treatment for heart attacks and diabetes. All of these effects on the use of preventive medical services will have long-term consequences on the health of the population. On children, the lockdown in many, many states led to extended time away from school. And we know from an extensive literature that this leads to enormous damage to the health, long-term health, wealth, and well-being of children, especially poor children were affected by this. So if you put these two facts together, what you have is a vulnerable population, an older vulnerable population, who really do and did need protecting from the virus because they face such a high risk of death if were infected. At the same time, the rest of the population were harmed more by the lockdowns than they were by the virus itself.
That was, of course, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, another great contributor to the program. That was delivered during Senator Johnson's COVID panel last week. And if you missed that, Senator Johnson's a senator from Wisconsin, and he held a panel of doctors and other experts and talked about the mandates and went on for about 5 hours. My producing team, both Maggie and Tom, said they could not get enough of it. Dr. Bob Tabali, who joins us today, he was also listening to quite a bit of that. I was struck because the mainstream media dismissed it as a bunch of misinformation, but the doctors that were there were quite credible, and he assembled a number of experts in their field. Dr. Tabala, before we jump into the phones, I just one more take. That was Jay Bhattacharya, another very gifted doctor. The media played this down. They dismissed it as a bunch of misinformation. I'd love your take.
Well, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but these are people with very profound, deep and broad academic careers, a lot of them, others with, you would consider them experts in their field, and, a lot of it very credible. And, it's like what I tell patients in the hospital. I say, we can't give ivermectin, we can't give hydroxychloroquine. I said, I tell people, and I think I've said so on this show, if you want those medicines, you get them now and you put them in your medicine cabinet. You stock up, so to speak, but don't expect doctors that work in a hospital to be able to provide them. No amount of begging is going to allow that to happen right now.
Gotcha.
And so, what do they say? I heard this one guy, a short Jesuit priest, Father Robert Matigue, say that a philosopher is an honest man seeking truth and talking out loud. And that basically was that was a room full of honest people seeking truth and talking out loud.
That's all we want, right? We want the truth. So Charlie in Kingston, New York, thank you for your patience. We'll start with you today. You're on the air with Dr. Tabali.
Oh, hi. How are you doing today?
You're welcome.
Read yesterday that Novavax has applied for emergency approval to the FDA. And I wanted to find out the approximate time it takes the FDA to approve something like this. And with that, I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you.
I love Kingston, New York. It's beautiful there in the Hudson River Valley. It takes a month, 30 days. We should have an answer within 30 days. And so I really hope that it doesn't get skirted into this. We don't need a new vaccine because we have two approved ones already. This is a very different vaccine. It addresses a very significant market need. There's a segment of the population. There's a segment that won't get vaccinated no matter what. But a lot of people who have objections to the vaccines, their objections are because of the side effects of the current vaccines that are available. And this vaccine is very effective. And as far as we know, they did three different studies, each about 30,000 individuals, but they did not see the type of issues that can be seen with the other vaccines, neurologic issues or myocarditis, mm-hmm. or, other very significant issues. So I'm very hopeful that the vaccine will be approved and then maybe a lot of people could go back to work. I wrote a letter for someone recently. I've only seen one medical or religious exemption, in the patients I've taken care of. I've only seen one get approved. And a recent one, a gentleman, he had unprovoked pulmonary emboli, meaning there was no condition that led to him getting a clot. It just kind of happened. And so this kind of person, he had life-threatening condition with blood clots going to the lungs back in 2019. And you stay away from agents that can provoke that again. And so I was advising him, wait for the Novavax. So I wrote him a long letter, to submit to his company. He was a middle manager at a Fortune 500. And he's been working remotely for the last three years. Doesn't mix with anybody elbow to elbow. And they denied it. And they're in the process of offboarding him. And it's really, in my letter, I said the Novavax may be approved in 30 to 60 days.
Well, Doctor, what about Covaxin? We had an email from a listener saying regarding non-abortion related vaccines, there's a vaccine from India called Covaxin, very effective against the Delta variant, and it was developed without a connection to abortion. Countries around the world are using it, but the FDA still refuses to approve it in the U.S. What do you know about that, and what are your thoughts on why the FDA has shut the door on it?
I don't know. Was it submitted to the FDA? I'm not sure it was. Maybe it was, and I just don't know about it. But that vaccine, actually, the efficacy of the vaccine is substantially less than other vaccines. So when you have something that's 90% or so or greater, like the mRNA vaccines or the Novavaxes, and you have another vaccine that's 50-60%, they're not going to approve the 50-60%.
Yeah, of course not. All right, well, let's move along because time's going to go quickly here. No, go ahead. Finish your thought, Doc.
I was just going to say that, and that's my understanding of where the protection of the Covaxin was in the 50-60% range.
Jay's been holding an eternity. He wants to talk to you. He's from Somerdale, New Jersey. Jay, thank you for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, Doctor. I had two questions that I was curious about. One was I had family members who had been vaxxed and still got COVID. They went, they were a little sick, not hospitalized, thank God, but they just were either tested and said either you have it or you don't, but never did I ever hear anybody say, how do they know what type of COVID you have, what variant you have? And the second thing I wanted to ask was, I've heard recommending things like taking zinc or vitamin D, but I never did I see anything like how much you should take, how many milligrams, or how often a day. And do you take it to prevent from getting sick or after you get sick?
Well, a series of very good questions there. And so it's very confusing if you listen to the mainstream media. They don't clarify this, but initially the vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, protected you from getting COVID. They don't do that anymore. They do protect you from serious illness and death. They do a very good job of that. And so that's why we recommend it to all the folks that are have medical conditions, heart disease, lung disease, transplanted patients, history of cancer, or they're elderly. They're at high risk with this infection. They should get vaccinated. But in the past few weeks, seeing hundreds of COVID patients come to the hospital and be admitted, when people were vaccinated, they had a much milder form of the disease, and oftentimes only, you know, if they required oxygen at all, it was only for a day or two, and for most of them. And the patients that we struggle with with severe infection are people who are unvaccinated. It's pretty clear on that. And so getting vaccinated does not protect other, does not keep you from getting COVID now, and it doesn't protect other people around you from you passing it on to them. But it protects you because you're vaccinated, and if you get COVID, you'll do better with it. You know, you'll process the COVID much better. As far as like vitamin D and zinc, I strongly recommend everybody to be taking vitamin D and zinc. And if you had COVID or if you got a COVID vaccination, I strongly recommend if you can take aspirin, you should take an aspirin a day. Ibuprofen is not the same as aspirin. Aspirin will help prevent reduce the risk of blood clots. But the vitamin D standard dose for an adult would be about 4,000. I take 4,000 units a day. If Dr. Fauci takes 6,000. Zinc, any size tablet. If they weigh them differently based on the chemical formulation and the way you want to. So either 50 milligram, 100 milligram, or 220, they're really about the same. And though the zinc is like once a day. And the aspirin could be just a baby aspirin once a day, the 81 milligrams. But that's what I recommend for all my patients. And I tell you, if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, you still want to take the vitamin D and the zinc because you still can get COVID. And now there's a new strain of Omicron, the BA2 strain. Now, if you personally are never going to know what strain you got if you got COVID. But what they do is all the people that get testing in a certain area, they'll take, you know, I don't know the number, 10, 100 of those positive swabs in a representative area. They take just a random representative sample, and then they'll go and fully genetically work those up and see what strains are prevalent in an area. And that's where you're getting the numbers like that the Omicron was doubling every week in the United States, and now recently it was like 98.9% of all the cases last week in the United States were due to Omicron. But that's the only way you can know. Yeah, Delta is almost non-existent now. The BA2 variant of Omicron is allegedly much more infectious than Omicron. In Denmark, where they're seeing a lot of it right now, they are saying that they think that it's no more severe than Omicron. Right. Now, I saw a huge flood of patients in my practice over the last 3.5-4 weeks, and everywhere in the United States, the same experience as what happened in South Africa. From the beginning of the outbreak to the end of the outbreak in the area, it was about 3.5 weeks from start to finish. Now, we actually the fire hose of Omicron patients kind of shut down maybe a week ago in the Chicagoland area, but there's still straggling cases. It's not 100% gone, but it's dramatically less. And one of the reasons why everybody had so many hospitalizations around the country and the deaths are rising and so on is just the sheer number of people. We had more than 400%, four times the number of cases and hospitalizations with this Omicron than we did at the height back in October of last year when there was such a big outbreak of the Delta.
Well, Doctor, hold the thought. I hate to do this. I'd take a short pause. When I come back, I want to thank everyone for their patience. So many people waiting to get on and to talk with you. Giving you the latest on COVID-19. Oh, we still have got to talk, Doctor, about six-month-olds to five-year-olds getting their shots. I want to get up to speed on that and much more. We'll take your calls, questions, or comments. We're approaching the very end of my runway here, so love to talk to you in these final moments. Our conversation will continue. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your Life Connected, The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out with me. It is always a delight to be here with you. My guest today, Dr. Bob Tobali. I know a lot of people want to get into the conversation. And, Doctor, before we jump back to the phones, I've been looking at a story today that I wanted your take on, and that's Pfizer asking for emergency use authorization to vaccinate kids as young as 6 months of age and five and under. What do you know about that, and how efficacious would it be to vaccinate kids at that age? I mean, do they even need it?
Well, Pfizer was studying this age group, right? And they found that a two-shot series only really was good or effective for the six-month to two-year of age. The children that were between two and five didn't really mount the response as expected. So that's why they were expanding it to a three-shot series study. But the FDA went and kind of twisted Pfizer's arm for whatever reason. They are trying to push Pfizer. Or actually, they begged. Well, they didn't beg. They asked them, or kind of pressured them, to apply for a two-shot series while they're collecting the data on the three-shot series. Now, that's a little bit unusual, but that's what they did. So it appears that that's probably going to be like a rubber stamp. Or quick approval, I should say, not a rubber stamp. Yeah, but gotcha. They said that they found no side effects whatsoever in children that were vaccinated. That they reduced the dose significantly, and they're checking. Their study series is a couple of about 1,500 children in each kind of age range. Yeah. So it's a pretty small study.
I'll be curious as whether or not, if you're the mindset, yes, I want to get boosted and I want my kids to have it, it'll go over well amongst parents. I think there'll be other parents who are going to wait. It seems like these variants continue to change, and I wonder how effective that will be in the long run. As you point out, it doesn't prevent you from getting the disease. Doctor, because of time, let me move to a pathologist from Newark, New Jersey. Dr. Jennifer is listening. She claims she's seen some deaths from the vaccine. Hi, doctor. Good to have you on the air with Dr. Tobali today.
Hi, good afternoon. It's really not just me, but all over the world, pathologists and medical examiner offices have actually been seeing it, so much so that all our websites have guidelines on how to investigate the vaccination deaths. So when we have applied the protocols, we actually have tested for COVID markers of inflammation, such as tryptase and antigen, antibodies and antigen of COVID. But what we have found, at least in my series that I have done in the New York area, and they're elevated of tryptase, markedly elevated. And so now when we get this reminder or warning from the CDC and New York State Department of Health that there are, quote-unquote, I'm reading it directly from the health advisory, multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children associated with coronavirus disease, infection, or COVID-19 vaccination. So it actually is similar to what we have been seeing, that there are markers of inflammatory conditions, elevated, enzymes that pertain to inflammation that are related not simply to COVID, which is kind of viral and therefore mounting an inflammatory response, but to the vaccination itself, which kind of gives the same, if not equal, effect. So this is really something that has to be widely known. And this was known by CDC, even published by in their website since May 2020. And we have been seeing it as a death, but we are not even encouraged to be this loud. Like, I want to be as loud right from the get-go to present it in our national organization, the meeting, but I was prohibited from doing so. But this is something that, in the interest of informed consent, has to be known from everybody. You can die if you risk this. And I have had, I have counseled many people who had been vaccinated, and within usually 2 to 5 days, they pass away. And and CDC's definition is 42 days from vaccination. That's the adverse events, and it's increasing, too.
Well, Doctor, thank you. I'm grateful for your call, for your insight. Dr. Dabali, I'll just let you do a quick follow-up, if you could.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are very hesitant to get vaccinated. I can't blame them. I've seen many unusual things after people have been vaccinated, more with Moderna than Pfizer, but it's in both of them. And one of the reasons why I'm very interested in Novavax, which one of my friends just texted me and told me that they're working on a combination coronavirus and and a flu vaccine for next flu season. But in the infant vaccination, the death rate for children is less than for influenza, and you got to wonder why. They think that they should vaccinate kids, and one of the arguments is to protect society and, you know, protect other children in school and whatever. But again, the vaccine doesn't do that. I mean, the vaccine protects the person that's vaccinated, but not others around them because the person who gets vaccinated can get infected, and this includes children. Mm-hmm. And the vaccine strains that that is targeted at, I mean, they were, you know, the original strains, the alpha strain of coronavirus, which kind of came and went a couple of years ago. So it's very, very compelling as to why it's the big push to vaccinate children.
Right.
If I had a child, I probably wouldn't do it. I don't have any children that age, but a lot of people are lining up to get their children vaccinated now.
Yeah, no, I got you. All right, move along. Andrea, I'm not quite sure. St. Charles, Illinois. Hey, how are you?
Yes, hi. So, Doctor, you had indicated before that it would be beneficial, or if you want to get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin now before you get sick. And, I mean, I looked around. I had some numbers before on doctors to contact in pharmacies that would dispense it. And I've called some of them recently, and frankly, they won't do it anymore. I mean, I don't even know how do you get it? And then how much do you take?
Good questions.
I guess the frontline doctors have a website, and they do that. A lot of the local pharmacies or the smaller pharmacies that were providing it, their suppliers have cut them off from getting the medicine.
But why is that, Doctor? I don't want to step on the rest of Andrew's question, but why is it so hard to get ivermectin or HCQ or hydroxychloroquine?
I'll let you know when God reveals that to me.
That's so bizarre.
I have no idea. I mean, it's you know, there's a lot of things about this that aren't confined within a logical progression of thought. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I agree.
You got no early therapies. Now you got a couple, you know, the Merck product and the Pfizer product that are $1,000 a treatment, and a lot of drug interactions and stuff and questions about fertility and so on. There's nothing else. Japan uses ivermectin early in for an acute infection, as does many other countries, and they say that it works.
Yeah.
And there was a recent study from a Japanese university published, I think, the other day that showed that ivermectin has significant antiviral activity. So, I mean, I don't know why this is. It's a safe medicine, and there's really no other treatments available. And if somebody wants to take it, I don't see why they can't take it. It's not going to harm them.
So her follow, the latter part of her question, she can get ACQ, or I think, yeah, was she asking for that? No, she wanted, was it ivermectin? What drug did she want? She wasn't how to get it, how much?
She was asking about both. I mean, hydroxychloroquine is commonly prescribed for people with rheumatoid arthritis or seronegative rheumatoid arthritis for their arthritis. It actually helps the arthritis quite a bit. So if somebody had that condition, they might be able to they might be able to get the hydroxychloroquine. But again, the data is not really out there so much on hydroxychloroquine. It seems to be significant with ivermectin. Ivermectin is an antiparasitic. It's used for parasitic infections and also for scabies. So if somebody has scabies, they can get ivermectin. But you have to justify to the pharmacist that the patient has scabies.
Doctor, I wish we had another 2 hours to talk. My apologies, everyone on hold. I appreciate your expertise and your time. Thanks for guiding us through the complexities of COVID. Check out Dr. Tabali, germbusters.com. Cal Clark is coming straight up, and I'll be back again tomorrow. Have a great day.